Thanks for listening to Three Empty Pints this week. If you haven't subscribed to us on your favorite podcasting app, please do. And you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, Acast, Google Play, Auto Radio, and Player FM. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Empty Pints. And if you would like to email us your questions, witticisms, and general disgruntlement, threeemptypints@mail.com. And also, if you'd like to donate, send us money, support us, please do. Click on the tip jar link in this week's episode or visit our website as well.
Chad, I have a question. I need your top five fuckable accents. And what I mean by that is chicks with an accent from another country, not your own, that you would want to fuck. Just so you can hear them talk to you dirty. In their native tongue.
Are or they going to talk dirty?
Like a British chick. Like, she's like, oh, Chad, fuck me. Fuck my brains
out. So this
out.
Is like a whole dirty conversation.
Like, you want her to talk dirty to you. Like, you know, she's, you know, you're banging her or whatever.
All right.
You know?
Kiwi.
Kiwi?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Okay, you gotta prep.
What is Kiwi? You're gonna have to
New
explain.
Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
But how much of that of a difference is it from Australian?
Oh, Australian. It's less
outbacky and weird.
It's less outbacky.
I mean, New Zealand's kind of smaller and it's a lot more not Australia. And then, you know, posh, we'll call it Rebecca Lowe.
Ooh.
Posh English London accent.
Yeah, mine, you know, Sporty Spice.
I'd be Liz Hurley.
Germany. But I have
That's
to...
It's a little gruff, though, isn't it?
I mean, there are, like, the cultured areas of Germany, and then there are the rough areas of Germany. How many is that? Three.
Is it three? Yeah.
Yeah. Italian.
Hmm. I guess. All right.
And Dutch.
No. You get that whole guttural thing there with the Dutch.
Dutch.
Oh, we came to Zurich. Yeah, yeah. Me too. And you're hot blonde and about 6 feet tall.
Like, now, it could be their native language, too. What about a Russian chick?
The accent's not that hot. Russian. It's like too...
They're usually pretty hot. I mean, not all of them are.
Yeah.
But the accent's too liquid for me.
Liquid?
But you're just trying to drop some liquid anyway, so what does it matter, huh?
That doesn't do it for me.
And she's going to have a bottle of vodka on the nightstand.
And she probably voted for Putin.
Should be bored.
Well, can you vote any other way? That should not besmirch her beauty or sexual, you know,
I mean, you didn't
technique.
Exclude me pulling her out of prison for voting for not Putin, so...
Voting for not Putin. that's funny. All right. Interesting. Kiwi kind of blew me away.
Baby names?
Yeah. Baby names. We are on the fourth name, week four, which is, we're still voting on that one, but that one is going to close, and then we will have the vote for the top four, or the four winners.
We want to hear Evelyn with multiple accents, because it's kind of English, it's kind of French.
It's funny you say that, because Evelyn is one of the winners, so your daughter's name could possibly be Evelyn. Tilly and Abigail are your top three finalists right now.
I'm okay with those.
And we're working on number four, and the front runner for number four right now is Hannah.
Hannah is leading,
so most likely... Hannah is going to be the number four, and then those four names are going to go up, and the winner of those four, Chad,
is the alt-right
will be your daughter's name, 2017.
These are pretty white European.
I don't know. I haven't hashtagged the poll, alt-right.
Hashtag the poll? Is that a porno?
Hashtag the
poll? I mean, there's not much diversity in those names.
I mean,
what name do you want?
There's two. Well, we had German names, we had Italian names, we had a few that were borderline like Spanish.
Listen here, this is what the people have voted for. Yeah. Don't start questioning the people. All right.
I always question everything.
Getting on your fucking high horse like you're some Hollywooder.
I didn't name him some fucking douchebag hipster name like Zoe.
If I would have known, I would have found more Kiwi names, apparently. Yeah. Holy hell.
I think those are just English names.
Ah, yes. So we're starting this haterific episode off on a bang, I guess.
Ah, I see what you did there.
What are we talking about? Douchebags that go to bars and get craft beer, right?
Artisanal.
Artisanal.
Did I pronounce that right?
No, it's art-isanal.
Isanal. Art-isanal. I got an English major over to my left and
some fuck ass
over here
side.
That thinks he knows everything. So,
well, I have a degree in English.
You do.
So I think I should know how to pronounce.
I thought
but
it
isn't
was
that derived
I thought
from
it was artisanal.
French.
I thought I swear.
Now let's discuss this.
Art-isanal,
where the hell is
artisanal?
Everyone says artisanal.
I'm sure they spell it T E E in that.
No tease, as in Chad's a cock tease with his Kiwi girlfriend.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah.
But instead, the actual pronunciation is art, like Chad is an artisan of the cunnilinguist.
Exactly. Art is in anal. All.
Art is an anal.
Art is an anal.
Art is an anal. Okay.
It is.
Well, I'm an artist at that as well.
with your Prussian... girlfriend? Or is she
whoever,
Greek?
You know.
Or is she Greek?
I thought she was Persian. Is that the same thing?
Do we know the definition of an artisan?
Isn't it somebody who makes stuff?
They perform a craft that is creative.
Is it a service?
It is a...
like a tailor.
Quote unquote, Chad, a worker, since he's a Marxist, who practices a trade or handcraft, craft person. One that produces something... as cheese or wine, ooh, in limited quantities, often using traditional methods.
It's like glass blowing and a tailor.
And woodworking.
A tailor, a woodworker.
Mason.
A Freemason?
No, they're kind
of... That's a different kind of Mason, isn't it? Yeah.
A brewer.
A brewer. You mean like a home brewer?
No, they're dick bags.
Oh, okay. What about a chocolatier?
Ooh.
What about the Werther's Original guy? What is he?
He's a pedophile.
Oh, okay. Got it. Pepperidge Farm guy, actually.
He lures children onto his lap with high fructose corn syrup laden candy. So why are you guys so pissed off about the craft movement and the artisanal movement? Why are you guys so mad about it?
Am I mad? I don't know if I'm mad.
I am, because so much of it is bullshit.
Well, yeah, it's kind of stupid, but wouldn't you just laugh them off and say, you're a fucking idiot?
No, but we have to take them seriously. You know, you have this fucking hipster douchebag who bought a homebrew kit on eBay, and, you know, now he's selling his craft beer.
Yeah, and, that's true.
And we have to respect
so
him and take him seriously.
So you just
want to
punch him in the face.
Yeah, and his hipster beard. I kind of want to shave it off, burn it, pour his beer on his burning beard to put the fire out, but then throw him on it before the fire goes out.
Wow.
So where did it come from?
Made in America.
Oh.
Do you remember, you both remember when we worked at the retail conglomerate and there was that whole push, there was the push back from things that were made in China.
I think Made in America has been going on for a long time. I remember when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
And they talked about, I mean, Hanes underwear, I think, was one of the first. Made in America.
And that was a big thing because it's like proud because we make it in America.
But isn't this an extension of that?
It is.
It is. It's like Made in America plus. It's Made in America by craftsmen. By artisans.
Like, they're all artistes.
Yeah.
And they're giving us their... I can't...
The fruit of their labors.
Yes, it's like, I am giving you something that you never had before.
Because it's an experience.
That's right.
And it's made in America. It's handmade in America.
That's what pisses you off, isn't it? It's just like, oh, look at how much better I am for giving you these wonderful things that I handcrafted for you.
And I remember when I was in my 20s and you first started going out. And, you know, like I've said before, I'm almost going to be 40. So I've seen the rise and acceleration. All of us have at this table. We've seen that rise and acceleration of the craft beer. I remember when I would go out and you would, you know, when I first turned 21 and I would saddle up at the bar. I mean, you looked at what was on tap and it was Miller, Bud,
Coors, Yingling, because Coors. We're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so you're going to have lager.
Yep.
I mean, and then you're going like, all this stuff is shit. I know it's shit because, well, I come from a family of drinkers to begin with. So this stuff is crap. What else is good? And invariably at that time, you were driven to this little green bottle that came from the Netherlands Heineken. Called Heineken. That's what you got if you didn't want what we now call the macro beers. And then I still remember when Stella Artois came out into, you know, our neck of the woods because it came out of – I remember going into Philly in my early 20s. I mean, unless you went to a big city.
Yeah, you couldn't get it.
Yeah, like if you went – if you wanted different beers, the only place to go was Monk's Cafe – in Philadelphia. Mm. That was the big deal. To go to Monk's Cafe, get up to the bar, which Angel and I did many a times, I destroyed an iPhone at that bar because I was fucking hammered.
I think it was a tank.
But that's where you went. You had to go to a big city, and then you had to find those little places dedicated to that type of beer.
The holes in the wall.
The holes in the wall. We make fun of all the nerds that have become elitist. In a way, it's that part.
But
beer was
when you guys
nerdy.
Did it, was that, I don't want to say before the internet, but it was before the internet as we see it today. I mean,
right.
you had to stumble through and find this shit
yourself. You had to research Monk's Cafe. I mean, there wasn't a smartphone then. I mean, the phone was still a flip phone. Jesus Christ, it makes me sound old, but you really had to research good beers.
And
know what
took
you were looking
effort.
Yeah.
You didn't just type beer advocate, what's cool.
There was no beer advocate. Yeah. There was no raid beer. There, I mean,
beer
there
menu,
was.
Beer menu, all that.
Yeah.
And you had to look at a beer menu, and between that and your common sense and telling the guy on the other side of the bar, here's what I like and here's what you've got, what should I order? And there was that, I mean, it was almost a negotiation with him.
Well, yeah. I mean, the first time you walk into a bar like Monk's, you stand there and go, Jesus Christ. Well, the first time you have Schmay is mind-blowing, orgasmic experience because you're like, what is this? I mean, it was still a big deal when your local bar got Guinness.
Oh, they have Guinness now. We have to see what that tastes like there. Because even that was different. It was just like,
well,
is it
then
colder? Is it better?
At first they got bottles in.
Yeah.
And then they got draft. Mm-hmm. And that was it for all the imports.
Yes.
I mean, first they got the bottles, and then they got the draft.
Ah, the bottles.
And it was, I mean, it's such a difference. You know, tapping you a sloppy-headed draft. You know, the first time you get one. You know, the first time you get a German lager, where they tip that back and it's spilling down the side from the head sweating over the side, and they slam down that stein in front of you and you're like, this is going to be magical and magnificent and orgasmic, and it's going to bring back my heritage. This is who I am. You know, that's important.
And I think that's why it accelerated over this millennial generation. People found that we've become so disconnected from real craftsmanship, from real work.
25 years ago, my dad homebrewed a lager. And, you know, I was not of an age to drink then, but he gave me a sip, and it was awful. And then he literally left it down in the basement for 5 or 6 months. And then one day, you know, he ran out of Yingling lager, and he went down, grabbed one up, popped the cap off, took a swig. This is really, you know, and he handed it to me to try, and I didn't have a refined beer palate, but I tasted it, and it was good. Part of it was the whole process had never left his house. You know, he made it there, he did all the work there, it sat down in the basement and aged, and all of a sudden it's this magnificent shit.
We've become disconnected from actually making things, from craftsmanship. Mm. And as I was joking, that's what Marx is really good at talking about. This is what happens to people when they're just standing on the line, putting things in a box.
When the capitalists take over and the middle managers who have no insight or no experience with, in his words, the means of production, they just have that exploiting profit mentality to everything.
We've sucked the soul out of everything. Yeah. I mean, we know that. We've grown up with that. And I think that's why the millennials really latched on to craft and artisanal movement, is that we have sucked the soul out of everything. It doesn't mean everything. We know where it all comes from. It all comes from China. You know, it has no... What's the soul of it? Does it have a soul? What is it? It's just there. It's in a box, and I bought it off of a shelf, and now it's meaningless.
Did we even buy it off a shelf? No, we ordered it on Amazon, and it fucking rocked up on our porch. You know?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
We've been engineered for consumerism. We live in a world of mass production, so people want to find meaning in things. It's also an economical thing. When we were talking about why did craft beer particularly blow up, I found a quote that was really funny because it talked about liberals, so I thought Chad would like it.
Ooh.
Todd Ashman, president of Blue Point Brewing Company, and he described this whole movement basically as that people are looking for an experience, and we always hear that about millennials are looking for experience.
Rather than possessions.
Possessions.
Yeah.
This article talked about the earliest craft breweries were generally located on the coast near large cities like Chicago and in liberal enclaves like Colorado.
Boulder, specifically.
Yeah. This was partly due to regulations. Residual blue laws in the South and Midwest stymied beer innovation. And
don't forget the Northeast.
Yes, yeah. And New England were all part of blue laws, and partly due to the greater desire for innovation and change in those areas. The craft beer audience was composed generally of upper middle class drinkers who could afford to pay a couple extra dollars more than what the macro beers were selling for, and craft breweries were happy to fulfill that demand. For a certain type of consumer, the extra cost was worth the deep satisfaction of trying something new and unexpected. It was not mainstream, but it was accessible to those who sought it out. As a result, it provided a chance to be part of a subcultural community of like-minded people who were also subverting the status quo. Does that just sum it all up?
Hmm. And that's the negative aspect, the part that gets me fired up and calls, you know, this whole thing hipster fucking scum. Yeah, that's it. But is there an element of truth to it?
Everyone's the same. Yet you try to find a way to distinguish yourself. Yet you become part of the collective.
And isn't there
that... That's humans.
When you find something new, isn't there that satisfaction? When you get to brag to your friends like, oh, dudes, check this out. Yeah. It's fucking awesome. And, you know, we all have that in everything.
Our generation, I think, was more like that with, like, music.
Yeah.
And movies. I remember being in college and being such a quote-unquote a film nerd, and you would find other people who were interested in like these European directors and writers and things, and then this generation went into beer and food, two things that beer pretty much food. Don't mean anything. I guess.
No, I remember music. I mean, that was a big thing, you know. It was finding those obscure bands.
Yeah.
And I didn't just like that indie scene. I didn't even really like that indie scene, but I respected the bands who were doing it and stayed honest to themselves about it. You know, I was always more into grunge, metal, art metal, prog metal, that whole thing. But it was really hard to find something new and innovative there.
Can you be a punk brewer? Like, does that mean never, like...
Yeah, you sell tattoo IPA.
Does that mean if you're a punk brewer, that only means like you brew in your basement and you have like 100 to 200 people come over and drink in your base? Like, how can you reconcile that? Is there a such thing? If you think about the punk scene of music and art and now the punk scene of brewing, is it all the same? Is that why all the bartenders are pierced and bearded and tattooed?
I know we talked about, I mentioned this before we started this episode, the old bartenders. I mean, you used to have those guys, and for a lot of them, it was a part-time job. I mean, I remember bartenders who were full-time teachers, but they were also all but full-time bartenders. You know, they worked Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they were good bartenders. You know, they knew the people who came in, and you'd come in and, oh, we kicked the keg of this last week. Try this new thing. I think you'll like it. But they weren't saying that because it was the new thing. They were saying that because they had tapped your beer for 5 years. They knew what you liked, and this new thing was, you know, you might not, but you might really like it. Now it's, oh, I made this IPA, and it's triple octuple hopped, and you know, we climbed to the top of the Himalayas before we fucking made the mash.
That shit is awful.
Yeah, you know that exactly what I'm talking about.
Awful. Well,
yeah.
that's like, what's that dogfish that was like, yeah, we put fragments from the Dead Sea Scrolls into this beer, and they were doing all that shit years ago.
Who cares?
Yeah, it got
fragments from clay pots that were in Mesopotamia, and we put them in there.
Well, I mean, didn't you have that experience? And it turns people into kind of beer snobs. Like that one guy you said you saw one time was like, I want something really hoppy, like Heineken. Like,
yeah,
what?
I was at a bar.
Like, you don't even know.
telling you, dude, I was at a bar that, you know, nearby us. It has a fantastic beer selection. And there was this guy there trying to impress a date, and he was talking about, yeah, I'm really into, like, really hoppy beers. I like really good stuff, you know, like stuff like Heineken, you know, the stuff from the Netherlands. And I'm sitting there going, and I looked at the bartender, who at the time was a total fucking murderous hater, and she knew her beer. And we looked at each other and went, no, this guy.
Is this guy serious?
Yeah. Then it breeds a culture, that subculture of people that have to keep up, you know, blowhards.
And that's why IPAs took off.
Yeah, because
there are so many other good types of beers.
It was something that could be resurrected, and I think that was the big thing. It was a dying type of beer, and then it was suddenly latched onto by that beer subculture, those home brewers, the nerds, the people who over-intellectualize everything. These are the same people that love anime, for Christ's sake. I mean, let's be honest. It's the same people who love to over-intellectualize meaninglessness. Is it any wonder why this is the same generation who loves and devotes their life to literary critical social theory? They love to explicate everything. So of course they're going to love this type of shit and gravitate to it.
And they forget the original craft. I mean, let's talk about craft beers. You know, where do they come from? Germany. Because there, it is a craft. It's been a craft for 500, 600, 1,000 years, where they've made this same beer the same way for 1,000 years. Because it's not broken.
But those kids don't like the German beer law. It's too constricting.
We have to fucking chirogenically freeze our hops. Dude, these hops only grow on, like, the top of the fucking Himalayas, right? And then we fucking sail our ship to the fucking Bahamas, and we use fucking banana peels to fucking brew our hops,
We harvest them in, like, the third week of January, because that's when they're at their peak.
Yeah, you can see why the academic types gravitated
stupid. And they all taste the same. Did they not realize that?
Yeah, they all taste like shit.
You don't understand. You don't have a refined
okay, I got it.
Jake,
oh,
I love you so much right now.
You don't get it.
I just don't get it. Do I have to pair them with different cheeses and chocolates? Oh, no, wait, that's wine.
You can wither away in ignorance if you don't understand IPA.
Oh, fuck it. Yeah. Fuck IPAs.
IPA-ism. I'm telling you, somewhere right now in a liberal arts college, there's a whole... There's got to be a curriculum devoted to IPAs.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I know I talked to you about this before we went on the air tonight. That whole... You know, you walk into a bar, like a craft beer bar, for better or worse, and you say... I want a beer. What do you like? I don't like IPAs. And that fucking bearded, fucking overly tight, tucked in plaid shirt asshole behind the bar is like, oh, you haven't tried this IPA. I just fucking told you I don't like IPAs. Why are you trying to sell me on an IPA?
Because
and we talked about this.
That's what he's doing, Chad.
But
he's
that old bartender, he listened to what you said and he said, well, what do you... He would ask you, what do you like? I like this, this, and this. Well, I don't have any of those, but I have this. It's got this quality of that that you like and this quality of this. Why don't you try it? He wouldn't tell you, oh, you should try an IPA and open up your palate and refine your taste. He IPAs, wanted to sell you something. You'd go, oh, this is good. Give me another and another and another.
This $22 bottle of this crafted IPA with Himalayan hops in it. It's delicious.
It's $6 for a 1.2-ounce snifter.
Yeah.
Lift your pinky, queer.
So, so you really hate on craft beer scene. But what about the whole farm-to-table, artisanal food subculture as well? That
The foodie douches?
The foodie douches.
Alton Brown.
No. They all go hand in hand. It is the same type of movement that we have witnessed.
That's where
witnessed.
They gravitated to. It's...
So you as a foodie, Chad, how do you reconcile your hatred to that for...
To quote Alton Brown, a wise, wonderful man, all food comes from a farm. It comes on a fucking truck to the restaurant. Where they take it off the truck.
I mean, we can go back to the 80s where you had, what's his name? Wolfgang Puck, who blew up. But look at what happened over the last 10, 15 years. We've turned, you know, chefs, which was so derided and so looked down upon for so many years.
Now they're artists.
I mean, we sent these kids to the, you know, the Culinary Institute of America, CIA, correct? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah.
You go into debt, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year to make $12 an hour. All of a sudden, Anthony Bourdain is super cool and writing books. What happened?
It made good TV. Or do you want a more complex answer?
I mean, yeah, because there is something to do with it. I mean, Bourdain maybe is kind of different because, you know... At his restaurant where he was the head chef, it was steak and frites. I mean, it was just French comfort food.
Well, there is a craft there. And not all of them. There are a lot of posers. But those poor bastards who worked their way up in French restaurants getting torn a new asshole when their fucking diced carrots had a slight variance in size.
Oh, the chef we know was trained over in France. He'll tell you how... unbelievably brutal.
Does the
Made in America thing tie into it? Because, I mean, we did... Made in America, to me, when I was younger, was more like, we make stuff. Like, we manufacture...
Well, it was about American exceptionalism.
Cars.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, well, we can't really do that anymore, so we're going to make food and beer. And instead of real shit, like...
Cars
washing
and
machines
factories.
And cars and fucking
refrigerators,
steel and
stoves.
You know what I mean?
The
like
shit you use
that's
at
what
home.
Made in America used to be to me. Like it was industry, and now these kids. Oh well, no, because I'm an artiste and I need to make this beautifully crafted IPA that just cleanses your palate after the fine cheese I've made for you.
If you don't follow the Renegade Economists, these guys are awesome. They put out a documentary called The Four Horsemen and Apocalypse a few years ago. It's free. You can watch it on YouTube. And at one point, there was some sort of esteemed scholar, academic, and he said, look, when cultures start to venerate food, that is a symbol of their demise. It's the same thing that the Romans did. And to get your foodie perspective on this, as you just hate it, you just rant it on the craft beer scene.
Thai food. I mean, hipster culture latched on to Thai food. And that's both awful and wonderful.
Are you still able to get over that I had Thai food recently?
Well, and I was going to build up to that. You had Thai food and how was it?
It was great.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't eat meat, so...
No, but it's got... flavor and it's got complexity and it's got depth. It's got all those things that an art should have. But Thai food by itself isn't pretentious about itself. You go to a Thai restaurant, you have a Thai waiter or waitress, and you've got a Thai woman or man back in the kitchen making what they grew up on. And
does the food part, and I've always looked at it like this, especially when it comes from big cities and where we live, you know, culturally, artistically, there is that trickle-down effect, and it does take maybe a year or 2 years. But I've always gotten, especially with the food idea is that it came through this huge economic expansion that we went through. And, you know, we saw the Battle of Seattle back in 99. We saw Occupy Wall Street. We understand how inequality has grown. And then you see all these rich people up in New York City and the big cities that are feasting on all these exotic foods. And, you know, they have these plates served to them that have some sort of, I don't know, mayonnaise reduction on it. And they have, you know,
you mean like the $500 dinners?
Yeah, right? And they have the square of buffalo meat in the center, you
bison.
Know?
Bison.
It's bison. That, is it the proletariat, Chad, trying to get their piece of whatever became the new American dream?
But do we ever get, I mean, I'm going to digress. Do we ever get that here? Are there $500 plates around here?
No, but it becomes that same, in a way it mimics that in the smaller communities and the medium-sized cities, though. Anyone who's got, grab any amount of cash can now just open anything. When does it just become meaningless? It's not like great art that you can go to the Met.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You can go to MoMA and look at, or it's a great, you know, novel that kids will study for years and people will draw something from it that will, that it speaks about human experience.
Or a seminal album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think all great art, like I just said, I think to me speaks about human experience, about what people are living through. When we look back on this, yeah, okay, I don't have to drink Heineken anymore. How important is it? It's just something I'm going to put in my mouth and then piss and shit out.
Piss and shit out. Yep. It's all meaningless. It's not, like you said, real art will stay up on the wall. Generations will see it. You know, like people will experience something. Now it's like, well, we're going to create this experience on your flavor palette.
Well, an artisanal bread that comes, you know, from the factory and it comes frozen, and our local bakery at our grocery store like fires up the oven and throws it in for 60 seconds to heat it up.
When I make my own bread, am I more artisanal than any of those motherfuckers?
Yes.
I mean, Bob's Red.
No, you're trying not to get sick.
I mean, Amazon is delivering me a case that has Bob's Red Mill flour in it. Like I said, does that make me
more? You a fraud! You're a fraud!
Yeah, I didn't go out and make my own rice flour and shit like that.
You're a fraud!
So you didn't buy a cheesy beer bread kit. And
so does the whole scene just already symbolize the worthless generation known as millennials?
Well, so much of it is fakery, and there's real shit there. There's real food, and there's real art, for lack of a better word, whether it's food or beer or liquor.
Is being a chef and preparing food an art?
For some people, yes. But there are still posers.
I think it's
there are a lot of posers.
I think
posers.
It's a guy heating up some food and so that you can eat, and they're making it into like, oh no, he's crafting this magical just plate.
See, those guys are posers, but I still think there's that guy back in the kitchen who, in his own head, it's an art. And he's not telling you about how it's an art or how all this work he did, but that plate that he's stacking on the tray for that waitress, it is art. Because of how much effort and work and thought he put into it.
It seems like such a shame to me when I watch, primarily I'll watch Anthony Bourdain, and he'll go all over it. Where was he? Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. That was a great episode where he went to that Danish chef. Was it Noma? I don't think it's even open right now. And, you know, the whole foraging scene. Remember the whole foraging scene? Yeah, yeah. Where they would go out and pick berries and twigs and plants. And you're just going, all right, I can see that in the economic collapse. I mean, is that what this clientele is, you know, projecting? Like, how did this become a thing? This is like almost the most radical end of it all. When does the bubble burst?
Not soon enough. Hipsters outnumber us. Do a search for mixologists and tell me when it's going to burst.
I have this article here. Zero Hedge picked it up, and it was talking about the money in the system. And how, you know, local banks were handing out money left and right. And it was an email from a guy. He was talking about the explosion of microbreweries in his area. And this really stuck with me when we talk about all of this microbrews, artisanal food, farm to table, when this bubble is going to burst. And this is what this guy had to say. Quote, there has been a really big surge in microbreweries. and it's now in the bubble phase, something not seen since 1996. The general manager of Legend Brewing, which has been around for 22 years, told me he's counted greater than 25 new breweries open in the greater Richmond, Virginia area. Most of these have no distribution, no access to shelf space in grocery stores, and are simply trying to find a niche in a crowded market. They will be washed out in the next recession. Good brands and brewing tanks will sell for 10 cents on the dollar.
But won't we just have a government bailout for them?
No, we only do that for the auto industry.
Be like, oh no, we have to save all the microbrewers because it's a big part of our economy now. They probably all fall back on, well, everybody drinks and everybody eats, so, you know, people aren't buying homes anymore, so if you want to build your microbrewery, that's fine. We'll save you into a 5-year loan on $50,000. There you go.
And then we'll put the exposed bulbs hanging from the ceiling
yeah.
up there. You know, it'll all be wood paneled, you know, rough hewn wooden tabletops and all that shit.
Totally. Butcher block. Maybe that's what it is. Big banks are just like, oh, well, this is the next thing. We're going to loan out money for startups because people want to make their own artisanal cheeses, wines. They want to get into, and it might not just be cheese. It might just be food and drink. It could be, you know, other stuff. I'm sure there's other, like, you know, because there's glass blowing and all. I mean, there's all that shit that people get into.
And bread.
Bread and, I don't know, clothing. I'm sure clothing, you know.
Furniture.
Oh, yeah.
Clothing is big. Tailoring.
Yeah, we have a, I don't know if you guys know this. We have a rather well-known reclaimed.
Wood.
Wood maker. In our area.
Oh.
Guy's got 100,000 followers on Instagram and all this shit.
Wow.
And I go back to this, but does it say something about us as humans that we're trying to take something back? Is that really what it comes down to?
Here's what it comes down to for me, and maybe this is the Marxist in me, so you might disagree or hate this. Are you trying to do it, whatever it is, whether it's beer or cheese, or bread, or wood, whatever. Are you trying to do it because that's what you want to do? You know, that's the craft you learn. That's your desire. That's your passion. That's your drive.
Or is it, I need to make a buck?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's like, there's lots of people out there that are doing it for all the good reasons. But then there's that element where they've taken it too far, and they've turned it into this fucking mushy, douchey piece of shit.
My dad
and it overshadows
buys
those people.
Tomatoes that are popular around here. And I remember he joked about it. I think it was 2 weeks ago we went over and, you know, we were standing there bullshitting. And he's like, yeah, you know, this gardening thing, it's cool. You know, I spent 3 months growing these, raising these, watering these, plucking these, pruning these, whatever. It's like, I think I saved about $2. And I was like, but when you're sitting there making something with your tomatoes, is it better? And he was like, yeah, it is. Yeah.
But that's a very human thing. And I think that's what it goes back to, is that humans are creating something of their own. Mm-hmm. It's not coming from a factory.
Yeah.
You're not disconnected from that. Yeah, maybe it's the tomatoes out of your own garden, you know.
But they're fucking delicious when you get them.
And you get that sense of satisfaction. Yeah. Like, I made this, and it's really good, and I had a hand in it.
And it's nice when you go to make dinner, and it's like, oh, it's time for the tomato, and you fucking stroll out of that
yard.
Kitchen,
yeah.
Walk around, grab that tomato, and pull.
But how many times on this podcast do we talk about generations have been indoctrinated into get a college degree, get out of the grease and grime of the working class, yet we are returning to venerating the working class, venerating the bartender who's become the mixologist, venerating the chef. Fuck, we venerate the fucking farmer these days for his organic.
I don't think they're separate, because when you grow something, it's having that ability to choose to do that in your free time. You know, it's going to your white-collar job from 9 to 5, but before you leave for your 9 to 5 job, it's watering your garden in the morning.
Is there something soul-sucking about the person who works that 9 to 5 job, you know, banking industry, or just, you know, any type of soul-sucking corporatized job, and they get off and they go, to, you know, the craft bar or the cocktail bar, and they sit there and they're like, oh, I want the artisanal gin and tonic.
I mean, we did the retail job and we just went to the bar and got drunk.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have an answer. I mean, I've never worked in banking. I can't picture me working in banking.
Working corporate is all the same. But those people that are, you know, they go from this artificial environment, this artificial hierarchy where you're so subservient. And then you go out of that to where, you know, there's this mixologist, you know, making your gin and tonic from a local distillery, you know, with, you know, the botanical that was in their garden or something like that.
This mint upstairs on the roof.
Is this where we go to where their people are searching for authenticity because there isn't any authenticity anymore?
Is there not authenticity, or is there not authenticity in their lives?
Is there authenticity in anybody's lives anymore? Who lives their own life to their own standards for the most part?
Those people in red America,
which we vilify all the time.
I don't know that we vilify them.
Look at you, libtard.
The flyover states, the guys who are drinking their macro beers.
Those people don't mean anything. They're not even close to the big cities. They have no idea what culture is.
Exactly. Well, that's why in the big cities we can enjoy this.
Oh, that's right. Because we're more refined.
Yes.
We are intellectual.
And we can enjoy this cider that we grew on the roof of our cidery, because we have trees up there.
I'm so smart and innovative, I figured out a way to grow it.
That's
on my
actually
rooftop.
A cidery in New York City, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
But no, those people in red states, they're, you know, I might disagree with them politically. We might have voted for somebody different. That doesn't mean they don't contribute to us, the whole America, whatever. You know, they go to work every day. They work hard, and then they go home, and they say, hey, fucking, I had to go to work today, and it sucked. I'm going to have a couple beers.
But aren't those the same people that go to work every day, right, and brew your microbrew? Aren't those the same type of people? Like, the vocation is the same. Just because you work for, I don't know, Blue Point Brewery, is that any different than the guy that's still down in the Missouri at the Budweiser factory? It's not.
No.
It's still the same vocation. But that guy that's at the microbrewery is turning his nose down at the brewmaster at the macro. It's bizarre. These stupid artificial fences we put up between humans that do nothing for us other than disengage us even more.
And hate people who do, at the end of the day, the same thing. Whether they do it with 10,000 barrels or 100 barrels.
Exactly. Don't tell me that these guys that get off of work at, you know, their specialty brewery don't think they're better than the guys at the big boy. I mean, they're thinking they're doing God's work too, huh? But how are you any different than the same brewmaster there? Because I didn't sell my soul.
Yeah, you did. You sold it to Tim, your boss. That's not any different. And that's why capitalism is flawed, ladies and gentlemen. Jake
and
loves
once
me right
again,
now.
Chad shits on capitalism.
There it is. I mean, there's some of my Tor hatred of it. I'm not saying I'm entirely right. There's a middle ground, you know. I hate it because of all the things that are wrong with it. Jake hates socialism because of all the things that are wrong with it. And they're both valid points. Somewhere in between, there's a happy
middle
ground.
Here's the thing. We talked about this the other day. Everyone on this planet thinks they can try to coerce or organize people into what? Into philosophies. That's all anything is. Economics. You know, democracy. Politics. It's not rule of law. Our law system is everything is a philosophy. That's it. That's all. That's it. Somebody came up with it and some jackass went, that's great. Let's institute that for humanity.
Oh, our law system is fucked up.
Yeah,
I mean,
all
it's
know
based
that.
On English common law, which goes back to...
Which goes back to... The guy who had the most corn ruled over everybody.
I mean, I'm trying to think back of all the misconceptions we had when it started, and I can't
we
even
all
get
know
there.
That's the one thing we can agree on. The law system is just awful. It needs to be abolished.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No. I mean, so we're not really against all of it. We're against the douchery of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't hate the craft beer movement. I mean, I've had plenty of great craft beer. I just don't want some asshole telling me
you're
that.
You're drinking a craft cider right
now. I am, and it's very delicious. But what I
object to is when I rock up to a bar and I see their...
Rock up.
They have 36... they have 36 beers on tap, and 32 of them are IPAs, and I say, I don't want an IPA, and that fucking bearded hipster behind the bar, IPAs are... No, I just... Fucking told you I don't want an IPA.
You're pissing off a lot of people that like IPAs, Chad.
They're douchebags, so it doesn't matter.
Wow. IPAs are terrible. Stop drinking it. But unless it's Yards. Yards was
you of
really
anything,
good, and I got destroyed on that.
It's Hefeweizens are great, and don't trust the government. Those are the two
what?
Foundations.
Wow. What is he podcast. Talking about? Phew. This guy's a libtardo, and now his call off is done.
Look, to all the real artisans out there that do it for their passion, because they love to do it, because it's something that they did or learned from a parent or grandparent, God bless you. We need more of you. To the assholes that try to exploit it and make money off of it, fuck you. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
So I sound like a capitalist.
So if you're
and
a
Angel
glass
sounds
blower,
like a Marxist.
If you're a glass blower and you make beautiful vases and you love doing it and your family's been doing it for generations and people buy because it's really cool, great. If you're some asshole who doesn't have a job that thinks I'm going to borrow some money and be a glass blower because I'm going to make money off of it, cool. Fuck you. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my hand-blown, mouth-blown artisanal glass.
I'm going to make my hookah. Pipes.
Yeah, blow something else, you fuck ass.
Hey, I'll take a quote from somebody that I work with today, and he basically said, eat a dick. And I was like, that's the quote of the day right there. You know what? If you don't like it, you can eat a dick.
That is so old school.
Yes, it is.
And he's a millennial.
Whoa!
He really is. That's right. On a side note, we talked about the impending hurricane, which hopefully everything isn't as horrible as it is. But we compared. I was talking about Hurricane Andrew because I'm old enough to remember it. And he's like, I wasn't even born. And I'm like, and now I'm going to go kill myself. So that was a little side note. That was
no,
my...
and Andrew and people didn't evacuate because, it was this awful storm. But then what made it worse, it like hit Miami and that... Miami-Tampa area.
Oh, it destroyed Miami.
It just fucking sat there and
I know.
Just fucking held
those. But it's unbelievable to me. I saw that satellite photo comparison about what Andrew looked like in 92 compared to what Irma looks like now. And Irma, I mean, Andrew is a dwarf. And so,
but Andrew hovered. I mean, if Irma just blows through at top speed, it won't be.
It's been moving slow. I mean, so.
But then it veered west, and it's going to come up the other side, where, hilariously enough, we talked all those people into evacuating to, and they evacuated right into the path of death.
Well, I mean, they need to get out of the state of Florida, period.
Isn't that what the government wants anyways, Chad?
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. So is this another big conspiracy? It is around 9/11. Oh, my God! Okay. And I think that now we end on that.